Today we continue with our series in talking to college leaders statistically from 2018. And joining us on the podcast today will be Stan Hodgen, the offensive coordinator at Shenandoah University. And they were number one in Division III in passing offense. That brings me to talking to you briefly about our national conference, where we also have a bunch of leaders from the football world. That's leaders from a program building perspective, like PJ Fleck, who will be there, and he's just led a team to a bowl appearance with primarily freshman players. He'll be talking about how they build their culture, which of course we know as row the boat. So we'll get some details on that. Continuing on that side with culture will be Brian Kite, and he has two sessions there for coaches that we're excited about. We'll have FBS coordinators like Phil Longo, Herb Hand, Noel Mazzoni, including some others who we're continuing to add to our schedule. And our high school coaches now have totaled over 100 state championships together in their career. So it's just a great group of guys there to hear from. It is an incredible networking opportunity, a chance to meet coaches from across the country and share ideas, solve problems together. Register at usafootball.com/NC19podcast. Use the code podcast99 to save on registration.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
On today's podcast, we are joined by another leader statistically in college football from 2018. And this particular statistic is from the Division III level, and these guys were the passing leaders at 386.5 yards per game. Joining me is the offensive coordinator at Shenandoah University, Coach Stan Hodgen. Coach, it's great to have you here.
Coach, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Coach, that was a great year, obviously, passing, and you've been at it a while now, Coach. You've been at it at the college level, at the high school level. You seem to have a knack for the passing game and leading your teams in the passing game as both a quarterback coach and as an offensive coordinator. Before we get into the specifics of how you guys did that this year, I want to talk a little bit about your background and your journey through the coaching profession. So, Coach, where did you get your start?
Well, I was actually fortunate enough to grow up as the son of a coach, and you know, that was what I was around growing up, and never wanted to be a policeman, never wanted to be a fireman. I just always wanted to be a football coach. And so when I made my college choice, my major declaration was very easy, and, you know, finished up my college degree and started coaching at the high school level in the northern part of North Carolina, and was down there for a good number of years, and then crossed the border and as a high school coach in Virginia for about five seasons, and then made the bump to the college level. And Mike Dunleavy at Averett University gave me a chance to experience college coaching. And from there, I went out to Southwest Virginia to Emory and Henry for a couple years. And then the last six seasons, I've been at Shenandoah up in Winchester, Virginia.
Coach, when you look at your time growing up in this profession, look back on it, what are some of the key lessons you've learned as a coach?
I think more than anything else, it's a relationship-based business. You know, obviously having a very talented player fall in your lap is, I think, the exception rather than the rule. Developing the relationship, building the trust so that when you get to a crossroads in the coach-player relationship, the trust is already there and the player is a little more likely to come out of their comfort zone and try something maybe a little bit different. And I just think it's a relationship-oriented business.
Coach, I know a lot of us learn from some of the mistakes that we make. Looking back, especially your time as a young coach, what do you think a mistake was that you made that you were able to learn from and able to develop out of that situation?
I think as a young coach, or early in my career, I was really invested in schemes and trying to out X and O opponents. And the deeper I've gotten into my career, I think it's less and less about the X's and the O's and more about taking care of yourself. And, you know, one of the things I think we do a really good job of at Shenandoah is, you know, we certainly have the education process every week of this is who we believe our opponent to be. But the emphasis of our time and our attention is on things we have control over. It's daily stress of fundamentals. And if we do what we're capable of doing, what we have control over, the results are going to take care of themselves. So I think I've transitioned from away from the X and O's emphasis and more into an evaluation of our own program on a daily, a weekly, and an annual basis.
Coach, is that something you think happened over time, or can you point back to maybe some specific instances that moved you from being that, you know, that guy who's going to scheme up things to the guy who now really started to see how it all fits together and how important the fundamentals are and how important execution is?
It probably came more over time. You know, at the end of every season, I'm sure I'm no different than any other coach. We look back on what just transpired, and, you know, to a large degree, we overanalyze it. So, you know, we start asking the questions, how do we improve next season over this season? And I think over, you know, a period of 3 to 5 years, you know, it was a slowly brightening light, but the light kind of comes on and it's like, hey, if we spend more energy on us and less energy trying to trick people or trying to show them something that they may or may not have ever seen before, it's a lot easier to achieve long-term results.
Now, Coach, I'm sure you still like to scheme a bit. I mean, we all do. How do you find that balance, I guess, between, especially now having some young coaches on your staff, et cetera? I'd always find those guys coming to me with ideas, and I completely understand where they're coming from because, like you, I was at that point sometime in my career when it was scheme everything up. How do you maybe take something that seems like a brilliant idea, whether it's in your mind or an assistant's mind, and kind of temper that and make sure it fits into who you guys are and exactly what you need to do to get better that week?
Something that we deal with every year, and it, within game planning week to week, we certainly cross that bridge as well. And we always ask the question, who and how well? Who do we have on our roster that can execute that assignment, and how well, how effective can he be doing that? If it makes us better, there's probably something we do incorporate. If it's you know, kind of not sure that we're going to be very good at doing that, then it's probably something that we, you know, put in a file for a later time. So we're very oriented in what the strengths are of the players of our current team and what their limitations are. And we try to work within that framework. So we're only asking our players to do things that they, you know, are very skilled in doing or things that they have a really good chance of being successful doing.
Coach, when you look at things from year to year with that in mind, that, you know, you want to have those guys on your roster who are going to be successful at things, at every program, at every level, there's going to be turnover. Your seniors are going to graduate. The college level, you have a little bit more control over what you're going to get through your doors, and you try to, I guess, recruit guys who are similar to the ones you have and have the skill sets that you want. But ultimately, you know, you're going to find that offense that kind of maybe is on a continuum of the way it might look from maybe being, let's say, heavier, for example, heavier run in 1 year versus heavier pass versus maybe another year you got a guy who could run and do a little bit of both. How do you account for those things within your system as you go into a new season and you're evaluating how your players fit and what they're going to be able to do best?
Well, now that we have finished our 2018 season, we have already torn down our offense and we've started putting the pieces in place of who we would project to be big parts of our 19 team. Now, certainly our recruiting class is not finished yet, so it's a liquid project that we currently have going. We always start with the offensive line, individually first, then as a unit. And we ask questions such as, Do we believe that we would be a good zone run scheme team? Do we believe that those guys are better fit for a gap scheme approach? Are they built to three-step protect? Are they built for a moving pocket? You know, what protections do our projected players, our projected offensive linemen, you know, what does their collective skill set indicate that they should be successful doing? And then we start. Then we go to the quarterback, and we look at his skill set. What is he really talented doing? And obviously, we got to identify maybe what is things that he is not as talented doing, his shortcomings. And we want to try to steer away from those. But if we can find a run scheme, a run identity with our offensive line, then we match that with our back. And if we think we're going to be a good zone run team, does the young man that we project to be our one back or our second back, you know, are they pretty talented in the zone scheme? Do they have really good eye discipline? And hopefully we can start fitting pieces together and building the offense that way. And we do it all with the pass game. We start with protection. Then we get to the quarterback. What kind of throws, from what point, you know, is the quarterback able to make those throws, and then do we have receivers that can run those type of routes and create the separation needed to create open receivers for our quarterback? So it's an awful lot of pieces. Right now it's about a 500-piece jigsaw puzzle, and we're trying to put the pieces together.
Now, Coach, do you have a specific checklist that you run down to go through this process? Because obviously, like you said, there's a lot of pieces in this puzzle.
Our staff has been intact for 6 seasons, so everybody is, you know, pretty much bought into the process. We always start with the offensive line. We always then go to the quarterback, and then it's kind of a bounce back and forth between the receiving core. You know, does that mean a tight end? Does that mean a four-wide set? Does that mean a two-back, three-wide set? You know, and so we're kind of bouncing back and forth between the wide-out, tight end, running back group. And so, no, I don't think there's an absolute, these are the questions and these are the boxes that we have to check in this order, but pretty much the process stays consistent every year.
Coach, as you look back on this past season and those pieces, the way they fit together, how would you describe your offense in terms of personnel and, I guess, overall in general, the concepts that you used? What is the basis of your offense?
This year, we were primarily a four-wide, one-back shotgun offense. We were tempo-oriented. Our pass game was, for the most part, it was concept-based, and we were certainly a vertical passing team.
With that in mind, what are the influences for you on your offense? You know, what kinds of things have you really studied and pieced together over time?
Back in the early 90s, I was fortunate enough to spend a generous amount of time at the University of Houston. At the time, they were running the run and shoot, winning a lot of ball games. You know, they had a Heisman Trophy winner there, and experiencing a lot of offensive success. And then it just kind of continued. I got to spend some time with Miles Davis, and I got to watch his teams practice for a short period of time when they were in the USFL. And then I got to spend time with Coach Leach when he was at Texas Tech, you know, and then Hal Mummy, and just some amazing offensive minds that I've been able to pick over the years. And so all of those guys, you know, have an influence on what we're doing now. But the one thing that they all have in common was at least the threat of the vertical passing game.
With that in mind, would you characterize your offense, because you mentioned, obviously, some pretty impressive run and shoot influences, the guys who were some of the first to do it, and you mentioned two of the best in the air raid type of offense. Are you a combination of those two things, or have you kind of evolved into your own thing having studied those two systems?
Primarily an air raid based offense. There is a sprinkling of the run and shoot concepts that we use from time to time. And once again, that's based on personnel, because your inside receivers in the run and shoot are slightly different than your inside receivers in the air raid. you know, so if we've got the, you know, the kids that you can't tackle in a phone booth, then we get a little more of the run and shoot in there. But we are primarily air raid.
With that in mind, when you look at what you said there being concept-based, you're going to have passing concepts. I think it's really important in how you structure your offense in a way that it's going to be easily learned. So how is that presented to your team in terms of the concept-based system?
We are a signal-based team. We are no huddle. Our quarterbacks take care of the majority of the communication on the field, and that's either through verbal calls or through signals to the extended receivers. But we use code words. Every year we try to simplify our verbiage and get it down to as few, allow a single word to mean as much as we possibly can and not limit ourselves with our tags or our offspring plays from that. So to give you an example, our day one install is going to be four verticals. And it doesn't matter what personnel group, it doesn't matter what formation we're in, it is simply called go. And, you know, so we've got a signal for go, we've got a verbal, you know, a handful of code words that all mean that we're running the go concept. And then you've got to tie your protection into it. And so those code words indicate to the guys up front, you know, whether we're going to be in 5 or 6 man protection.
Yeah, go is one of my favorite plays. Four verticals. I used a ton of that in my coaching career. I found more and more, because a lot of times we'd have some good athletes, but maybe not great. And I used a lot of the switch releases. Are you guys running more of the straight four verts, or are you guys doing a lot of switch?
We have both. The years that we are primarily being defended with a zone approach, you know, some form of zone, then we're just straight four verts. You know, when we're getting man coverage, that's usually when we'll incorporate our switch releases, just to try to create a little space there with the, you know, with the rub or the pick or whatever you want to call it. But we try to run the defensive guys into each other.
Now, when you see quarters, do you still like four verts? You guys making some adjustments within your landmarks to be able to get some guys into space?
We don't normally change landmarks. What we'll usually do versus quarters in the go concept is we'll tag a route. You know, for instance, we might run three verts and have our number one receiver to the right run a dig route underneath, you know, that seam route from number two. So, you know, you got a go dig concept there. But we'll tag our go concept against quarters coverage.
Coach, I asked you to share with us one of your favorite pass concepts from 2018, and you sent me over your H-cross. So for our listeners there, and I know we don't have a visual right now, though we will include some of this on our blog at blogs.usafootball.com. Describe the H-cross for us and give us a setup.
Well, to start with, we've got the umbrella of the cross concept, and then we tag who the cross runner is. And so with the example I sent you, the H receiver is the inside receiver on our right. And his, because he's been tagged as the cross route, his route is under Sam, over Mike. You know, so he is working underneath the Sam linebacker, getting vertical, climbing above the Mike linebacker, and then flatten it off. So if you look at us, if we're in a 2x2 set and the cross is coming from an inside receiver on our right, the outside receiver is running a post over top of it. And then on the other side, the inside receiver is running what we call a pressure out, where he's working vertically for outside leverage and then kicking it at, you know, around the 6-yard mark and trying to out leverage the outside linebacker to the boundary. And that's your blitz beater. And then our number one receiver away from the cross, he's running mandatory outside release go. We'll swing the back to the cross's alignment. So in H-cross, the back will swing to the right. And then basically the quarterback's read on this, obviously we've got the pressure out if he gets extra bodies coming. If we don't get extra bodies coming, we have morphed into reading the safety to the crawl side. And we're reading him. Does he come down on the cross route and leave the corner one-on-one with the post, or does he stay high and defend, you know, either the middle third or the inside quarter, whichever? And so we're trying to put a high-low on the safety with this, and then obviously the check down to the back on the same side.
So Coach, looking at this, what inspired you to tweak the typical Y cross from the air raid and create more of a Mills concept with it, with a dig and post?
We were having a lot of success with the vertical passing game, but it seemed to be a very limited presentation for the defense to defend. It was basically four verticals, or you know, we switched, released them, and that was really our only way of getting the ball to attacking the third level defenders. We were already running the cross. We were actually reading. We were reading an underneath defender, and you know, so it was basically we were throwing the cross first to the check down, and the only way we were throwing the post was if we got a gimme. And I mean, they were just misaligned, or you know, we caught them in, you know, in a tempo and guys are out of position. But it was happening so seldom, and it just seemed like to me that there was a lot of positive yardage to be gained from the concept. And so we just toyed with it one spring to see if we could handle that, reading a third level defender, you know, high low in a third level defender. And our guys just, I mean, they really took off on it and they really liked it. And we've been doing it ever since. I think this was the third season that we actually read it that way.
Coach, I know you talked about the different influences you have and kind of a tweak to the typical Y cross that you see in the air raid offense to maybe more of a Mills concept. So what would there be anything that would cause you to read maybe the backside first or anything you're looking at over there?
Well, we're always pre-snap looking for, we call them gimmies. So if we get a press corner and he's not getting, doesn't have safety help, or if we get a one-on-one situation with our MOR, with our mandatory outside release go, then we will go, we'll start the progression on the backside. But that's pretty much it. It's a matchup approach. And so if our quarterback sees that we've got a favorable matchup, then he has the ability to change the progression or alter the progression of any of our concepts.
When you have that opportunity with the post that gets left one-on-one, is that guy's a dude? I mean, obviously that helps, but the technique is obviously something you have to coach up and is important to the success of that if you're going to win on the post. What are some keys for you in coaching up in this particular case, as we have it diagrammed on our show notes, the Z winning on that post over the top of the dig?
We spend an awful lot of time and energy on stemming our routes to win. And so when we get, you know, if a number one receiver is running the post, then we want to stem that so that we win inside leverage on the corner. You know, if you're getting quarter, and we're running this a lot against quarters coverage. So we're banking on the corner feeling like he's probably got some inside help. And so he's not going to fight that stem release as hard as he would, say, in cover zero. But we try to get inside and then push him vertical to make him think that it's an inside go off of his technique. And then if we can get to that point, you know, then we can stick him a little bit and keep it skinny, but still win to the inside. And we certainly want the throw inside. We try never to get the throw past the near upright of the goalpost, because we don't want to bring the other safety into it who could see the throw coming.
Coach, looking at things and going back to, you know, your concept-based teaching, do you carry a large volume of pass plays, or are you more with the air raid philosophy of really nailing down a few concepts and being able to perfect those in practice?
We strive every year to be simpler than we were the season before. Kind of where we are right now with the skeleton of a game plan is we want to take four pass concepts, three quick game concepts, four screens, and three runs into every ball game. And so we're certainly, that's the bulk, that's our plan A going in. And as long as we're getting defended the way we believe we would be defended, we pretty much don't vary from, you know, from that very small menu of plays. You know, it's when we get the surprises and we're getting a different threat or we're getting a completely different coverage that we kind of, you know, we kind of grow that plan or we move that plan away from plan A to some other concepts that fit. But one thing I think we do a really nice job of in our weekly preparation is if we're playing a team that is primarily, say, a cover two team, we still spend the exact same amount of time all week on our cover two beaters, our cover three beaters, our quarter beaters, and our cover zero beaters. So when we get something in game that maybe we weren't anticipating, our players don't have, they have no, there's no panic involved at all because every day of during the week, we have worked our, you know, our coverage beaters other than what, you know, what they have demonstrated on film for the last 3 or 4 or 5 weeks.
Coach, when you're putting together that game plan and you have, you know, your four drop back, your three quicks, your four screens, your three runs, and you're looking at those concepts, how many variations are you carrying of each? Obviously, over the course of a week, there's a limited amount of practice reps you're going to have. So how do you look at having enough of those answers and enough variation to really stress the defense versus balancing it with there's also so much practice time you have?
Everybody's number one enemy is practice time or the lack thereof. And probably we have more, we'll actually take more answers and more variations in with the run game than we will with the other things. You know, you can show up our screen game, we can smoke and mirror it with formations and motions, but it's still the exact same play. So, you know, other than changing a formation or changing a motion, it's really not any additional add-ons in the screen game. Our quick game is pretty cut and dry, and it's very coverage-oriented. We've got certain quick game we run against one high. We've got certain quick game we run against two high. You know, and so there's not a huge amount of variation with that either. Basically, where our pass game add-ons come in is with the five-step game or with the, you know, the true drop-back game where we might tag a dig in the go concept if we weren't expecting quarters coverage but we're getting it or, you know, something of, you know, of that nature.
With quarterback having those tools, so for example, the quicks you like against two safety defenses versus one, or like you said, in your drop back, being able to tag a quarters beater in with a dig and post, for example, how much of that happens on the line of scrimmage versus coming from the play caller?
I would say most of it happens at the line of scrimmage. How our offense has developed or evolved is because of limited practice time, film study and quarterback meetings are where what we're talking about right now, this is where that happens. You know, so if, for instance, if we call go, our Z receiver knows he's running, you know, go route on the bottom of the numbers. Well, if the quarterback checks him to a dig route, you know, he doesn't know any different. You know, he's just now running a dig route. So it's not, no one else has to understand, wow, we just changed the, you know, the complexity of the route combination because we're getting a coverage that we didn't recognize. But I would say that probably 75% of it happens at the line of scrimmage.
On the film study and on the classroom time, how are you best utilizing your players' time? Because we still are limited, especially at the college level. You have the 20-hour rule. We're still limited in our time, even if we take some of that learning off the field. So what things do you guys do as teachers of the game to be the most efficient and effective in those classroom settings?
That's when we certainly will game plan oriented. But what we're looking for in that is not big picture so much as, A, this is another version of Cover 3. It's, we're looking for individual techniques and tails of the defensive player. You know, it may be a corner stance. It may be where his eye focus is. But trying to find those things in film that give our players a pre-snap advantage, as, you know, that will indicate what is about to happen long before it happens. And I think that's the focus of our quarterback meetings, is we're looking for those things so we can make play improvement calls at the line of scrimmage. And so when I make a play call and our quarterback gets us in a better call, you know, that kind of works out for all of us. And I'm a huge fan of that. But that puts the onus on me during the week to make sure that I get that stuff communicated, I get it taught, and then they, during our practice time, they have to demonstrate that they have a really good grasp of that in order to get the green light on Saturday.
Coach, teams that are highly effective offensively usually are really good at practicing as well. What are some of the best things you guys do on the practice field?
Well, I mentioned earlier, I really like the fact that in game week, regardless of what we anticipate getting coverage-wise, we work all the components of our pass game every single day, and that's the majority of that's in a routes on air type drill. We put our guys in competition periods, you know, our wideouts and our DBs, and, you know, in one-on-one drills, and sometimes there's a ball involved, sometimes there's not a ball involved, but, you know, whether it's stemming for leverage, whether it's releases, you know, but it's a fun, you know, the focus is on our fundamentals. And again, primarily our time is spent on how do we improve what we're doing, as opposed to, oh my goodness, we're going to get this technique on Saturday. So the only time that we do any teamwork in practice is in our screen game. That's the only element of our offense where we feel like that all position groups have to understand what their 1-11 fit is in the play. And so, you know, we don't spend a lot of time in team settings. You know, we're working, you know, we've got a group inside run, we've got a pass galley going on, but we try to maximize the minutes that we're on the field and not have any more downtime during our practice. I mean, we never practice longer than 2 hours, and you know, and it's very unusual for us to ever get more than an hour and 10 minutes of offensive time. So how do we take that 70 minutes and get as many reps and positively affect as many positions as we can?
So, Coach, for my clarification, with your screens, you said you're practicing those primarily in a team setting. Is that essentially set up as a drill, or are you talking about just basically running team reps there? How do you work those?
When we're installing it, when we're teaching it, we'll put the 4 or 5 critical blocks. We'll put those guys out there, and it may be coaches, it may be dummies, it may be tackle wheels, you know, some semblance of this player. And so the lineman getting out, or the receivers, you know, going to fit, understand where their responsibility is and how that complements the play. But then once we've got it installed, we typically run that against our exchange or our scout team guys, you know, on a weekly basis. And we'll try to devote of the 3 practices every week, 2 of the 3 at a minimum are going to get a screen period. And that'll be basically our only 11-on-11 time in exchange or scout team.
Got it. And I was kind of interested there. You said you only spend 70 minutes of that 2 hours on offense. So I'm assuming, I guess, that you guys still split up between offense being the focus for part of a practice and defense being the focus for part of the practice, as well as getting your special teams in there?
Well, included in that, I mean, we spend special teams. We believe, our staff believes, the special teams are the most explosive part of the game. And so we devote, we devote an incredible amount of time to the special teams. And so when we're doing that, now we may have some position players, for instance, if we're working on kickoff or kickoff return, we don't have many offensive linemen involved in that. So they get to steal that time, for some individual work while we're working on, kickoff per se. But as far as dedicated offensive time, we usually get about an hour and 10 minutes. And so, but I'm also including team flex and stretch in that, and, our team conditioning drill as well. So we're never on the field more than 2 hours.
Coach, looking at your run game, we haven't talked about that. You guys obviously threw the ball around a lot with 386.5 yards per game, but you were number 10 in the country total offense at 502 per game, and number 20 in scoring offense at 40.8. So you still are using the run game, but maybe just not as much as other teams do. What are the focuses of your run game? Are you guys a mix of running gap and zone? Are you primarily, just one or the other, or what goes into the run game for you?
This year we were primarily a zone team. We do have a couple gap schemes, but we were very experienced up front this year. We're playing seniors at both guards in the center. Our two guards were third-year starters. Our center was a fourth-year starter. And so we did kind of expand our run game a little bit this year just because we were older and more experienced than normal up front. But primarily it was inside zone. We complemented that with outside zone. We ran a trap scheme. We had a speed option scheme. And so then based on angles, there were times that we would run inside zone but take somewhat of a gap approach on the front side, just from an angle standpoint. So this year was the first time we had done any of that. But again, I think the reason we were able to do that was because we had some really experienced guys who had played together for a very long time.
Coach, the hottest trend in football is the RPO. Has that made its way into your offense?
We have some RPOs in our offense, but everything we do is pre-snap. I don't have any post-snap RPOs, and it goes back to practice time. In our quarterback meetings, I can cover all of the post-snap RPOs. We can take care of all of that, in a meeting setting. And I feel like maybe I just don't know how to coach the post-snap RPO. But I feel like that the quarterback would need a significant number of snaps in order to get that lead correct and ball distributed where it needs to go. And in my mind, he needs more snaps than maybe the offensive line needs for that particular run play, or for the receivers need for that particular route combination. And so just from a practice time standpoint, all the RPOs that we're doing are pre-snap decisions.
Got it, and I would agree with you. That definitely is something that takes some time on task. It's an element of the option game for sure, and you can't just expect your guys to go out and incorporate any kind of option without spending some time on it. But when you look at the run game, going to that, Coach, is that something you call based on the numbers, or is there a certain thing that causes you to get into your run game versus calling a pass, which you guys excel at?
I mean, we want our run game to be every bit as explosive as our pass game. So now you get into it, and this is what we debated, was what's the definition of an explosive run? Or when are we successful running the football? And the primary purpose of the run game this past year was we wanted to run it enough, but more importantly, run it effectively, so that we were helping the opponent defend us honestly. If they were going to defend the run with two and drop nine and we were going to be ineffective running the football, then that's not a formula for success, at least from our standpoint.
Right.
And so, we wanted the run game to complement the pass game, but get enough production to where we were helping our opponents defend us honestly, and kind of where we settled on that, we felt like it had, we had to gain 4.5 yards a carry. If we were at 4.5 an attempt, then we were effective enough running the ball, you know, that we could accomplish that. And I think we actually finished the season at 4.3. But for a huge chunk of the year, we were hovering right around that 4.5 mark.
Coach, when you guys get down to the red zone, especially getting into that 10 and in, do you guys look at any different personnel sets, or are you staying in your 4-wide gun look?
We don't change.
And anywhere on the field, do you guys ever look to incorporate empty? I think that's what I see a lot of passing teams do as well. Do you fit empty into what you do?
We've got some empty stuff, and it's, but we run the exact same concepts out of the empty set. So all we're doing is changing the presentation to the defense. We don't get wild and crazy with 3 or 4 or 5 new route combinations just because we got 5 receivers on the field. We end up post-snap in the exact same places.
So he ends up, I'm assuming your that would be your back's assignment, whether it's the back or somebody subbing for him. He's essentially going to run exactly what the back would do out of the backfield.
Right, he's just going to start it, to start the route from a different location.
Coach, to wrap things up here, let's talk about a few things with your unit. We didn't quite get into some of the things I usually talk about up front is, you know, the unit you have to develop, and obviously the head coach has put that responsibility on you. You're going to build around, you know, the culture that he set up, but what are some of the important things for you to have in the culture of your unit, in your offense?
Beginning with the recruiting process, hopefully we're instilling, we're growing trust. Trust is a huge deal for us, but trust is a two-way street. So we want to earn the trust of the players, but at the same time, we want to present, we want to make sure we're presenting to the players that they can trust us as well. And then we want our guys to love each other and care about each other and play for each other. And I think one of the things that, you know, is kind of getting into society for sure, and, you know, every now and then rears its ugly head in athletics is the motivation of playing for yourself, or, you know, what about me? And we really try to, you know, to educate and help our guys understand that it's a lot more fulfilling, it's a lot more rewarding, you know, if we're able to do it for someone else, or do it for the guy lined up beside me, or, you know, so that building that family and that togetherness is really important to our culture of our offense.
Coach, obviously you guys are doing some things right on offense to be able to excel at the level you are. When you look at all the things you do with your players, Coach, whether that's from the stuff on the field or to some of the stuff we talked about here with building that trust, what do you feel is really the one thing that gives your players the winning edge?
I think they have completely bought in to what we're doing, our philosophy, our approach. I think they're committed to taking the standard that has been set and the challenges to exceed it, you know, so do it better than, be more productive than last year's team. You know, it's kind of a reoccurring theme. Whether it's spoken or unspoken, and I think that is, you know, we are very player led from an expectation standpoint, and, you know, it seems to be a really good thing for where our program is at this point.
Coach, how can our listeners get in touch with you if they're interested in learning more about what you do?
My email address is my first initial and last name, SHODGIN@SU.edu, or they can reach me on my cell phone at area code 336-592-0605.
And Coach is on Twitter as well, @S_Hodgin. That's HODGIN. Coaches, if you enjoyed this episode, please go to iTunes and 5-star rating for us, as well as please reach out to Coach and thank him on Twitter. Again, that's @S_Hodgin. Coach, It was great to talk ball with you here and get some insight on what you guys do to excel in the passing game. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Coach, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.